Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Bronx, New York, this is the Brovian Talks. The news, information, and stuff, follow us on Twitter at Brovian93, at Brovian93. That is Brovian93, Brovian93 on Twitter. So I hope all you guys had a great weekend. I know the Mets did up until yesterday, and this is where we will begin our show. The Mets, we all know, had a pretty bad April. I don't think anybody who's a Mets fan at least expected this start. Very slow, a lot of injuries. And I really want to point out, even though the Mets got humiliated, destroyed yesterday, overall, this was a weekend that you could say saved this season. If the Mets got swept, forget about it. It'll be a completely different story. This weekend has bought this organization some time. It bought Kitty Collins some time. And it really did ease down the panic. Because even though the Nationals really batted around the Mets yesterday, the Mets, up until things got out of hand, kept on fighting back. They were within one run halfway through the game before the National bats exploded. And that is my takeaway from yesterday. Actually, the only good thing I took with me yesterday, Syndergaard, we all know, he thinks he's Superman. He thinks he's invincible. And he got humbled yesterday. To put it mildly, he got humbled. He's not indestructible. He's not Superman. And for now, he's no longer Thor or the ace of this rotation. This rotation is now the Grom's rotation. And, you know, you could blame Sandy Alderson, Terry Collins, the Met management. It's this. It all comes down, in my opinion, to Noah Syndergaard. And believe me, I love tough, gritty players on my teams. I love that. That's why I like Noah Syndergaard. But there comes a point where a line is drawn. And would it have been the end of the world to take an MRI? I can understand that leaving a game, or not wanting to come out of the game, wanting to pitch an extra inning, maybe even wanting to pitch on 3 days rest. But to refuse to take an MRI for your health and the team's health. If the MRI came back with something mild or nothing of importance, then yeah, go pitch. But if it finds something as bad as what it actually found, you might be gone for at least 2 months. It's just immaturity on a player's part. And the Mets, right now, their two big dogs are gone, Syndergaard and Cespedes. With a lineup that seems to be coming alive, but it's not complete yet. Jay Bruce, great season so far. Conforto, hero on Saturday. Darnell, the hero on Friday. Camellia got his first save. DeGrom, shaky start, but gets the win, fights through it. Terry Collins, on Friday night, made probably the gutsiest move of the season. If it failed, he'd be getting killed by you people. But it worked out. He's a genius. And he showed. The guy knows what he's doing. Now, I have to say, pulling Familia with the bases loaded with one out in the bottom of the ninth inning on Friday, I have to tell you that I was mixed. I was torn. I'm not going to be that Monday morning quarterback who was like, oh, yeah, that was a great decision. I was always for that. Well, the majority of fans who was probably screaming at the TV when the movie came out of the game. But you know what? It worked out. And sometimes, you know, in a big game like that, and probably the most important game of the season up to this point, you have to take a gamble. You have to make a gutsy call. And Terry Collins made the call, and this isn't the first gutsy call he made. He's been making gutsy calls for at least the past 2 years, the majority of which worked out. Now, is it Terry Collins' fault the Mets are below 500? They had a pretty awful April? No, it's not. Is it Cindy Alden's fault? Not really, no. I mean, I think the only thing he could have done was tell him he's not pitching until he takes the MRI. But again, you know, that's hindsight. But the problem is that the players are old. You know, they're injury prone. I remember last year, same thing. The only difference is happening earlier than the last season. And who knows, maybe come June and July, they'll be healthy 100%. Playing baseball that we know they could play. Now, Granderson has to hit. Cabrera has to hit. Reyes is hitting again. Good. Hopefully, he stays consistent. This bullpen isn't that good. Addison Reed, who was great last season, great in a wild card game, this year, not so great. And I do think that come the trade deadline, the Mets will make a move. I think they'll make a move in the bullpen. They're in last place. They're below 500. But it's only April, and we've seen not once but twice this team come from out of nowhere to get hot at the right time, make the postseason, and it really excites us. Is it nerve-wracking? Of course it is. Am I nervous? Not really, no. My hands are a bit sweaty, but I'm not nervous yet, and I'm definitely not in panic mode. Now, they go to Atlanta, a new ballpark against the Braves. Now, I know the Braves have had that number of late, but I really do think off this weekend, I really do believe that the split, take three or four from the Braves before they come home. And, you know, this, you know, put yesterday aside, this was still a pretty good weekend. Yes, I get it, Syndergaard's gone. Yes, I get it, we have no Steven Matt, no Seth Lugo, no Cespedes, no Flores, no whoever. But you have to be happy that Grom looks like he's back. It would be happy if Familia got his first save of the season. That Darno's hitting again. Brews is hitting. And Conforto is hitting everybody now. I know Met fans. I'm a Met fan. All they want to do is moan and pout. All they want to do is look at the bad side. And I get it. Believe me, I get it. That was me yesterday. But this morning, as I was really thinking about it, this weekend, to win the season, had more plus than minuses. It just did. I had the Braves, and they come back home and take on, I forgot who, be honest with you. So that's the Met front so far. On the hockey front, the NHL playoffs, always exciting hockey. Rangers-Ottawa, a great game too, that the Rangers are probably kicking themselves for letting go. The Panthers are looking like Stanley Cup contenders. The Oilers, the first two games were great. Game three, the Ducks pretty much had to win it. Because let's be honest here, if the Ducks lose game three, there's no way they're going back to Anaheim. And they came out flying. Oilers fought back, but the Ducks, you know, got some insurance goal. The Penguins, I mean the Capitals. If you're the Capitals, you must be thinking, how in the world do I beat this team? You outshot them 16-5 in the first period, and you don't score. Then the Penguins get, like, what, three odd man rushes because the Capitals have a couple players out of position, Tim wants to take advantage of it. And how about Fleury? I mean, I know I've criticized Fleury in the past in the postseason. I really think the Matt Murray postseason phenomenal of last year has really made Fleury a better goaltender. Because he's having a great postseason. Now, I know some pucks, you know, miss the net, hit the goalposts. But Fleury has been nothing short of phenomenal. Brian Holtby? I mean, I live in New York City. So all the attention is on Lundqvist. But Holtby, there has to be a lot of eyes on this guy because he did not have a good game two. Game one, he was solid. Game two, not as good. I know people want to blame Ovechkin, the coaching staff, but Holtby has to be one of the guys who people look at. I mean, this is a team for two consecutive years who people really had their eyes on, saying this is the year the Capitals finally overcome the hurdle. Now, maybe it's the Penguins. Maybe the Penguins are in the psyche. I don't know. But I do know here in New York, at least, all the eyes are on Lundqvist saying, can he win a cup? What's wrong with him? He's not a winner. I assume if you live in D.C. and in other parts of the country, you might be thinking the same thing about Holtby. Because the guy's a great goaltender, but he hasn't done enough to carry this team into the next round or into the promised land, into the finals. We saw Martin Jones do it last year. We saw Murray do it last year. We've seen Brodeur and Ward do it. Even Hasek's done it. We've seen Jagr do it for the Ducks. Holtby needs to shut up the Penguins in one of these games. If the Capitals want to win the series, Holtby has to have one game that completely dominates. But he's on 100% and nothing's getting by him. Absolutely nothing. He needs one of those games. Because the Capitals offense is on fire. And the Capitals, Game 3, which is tonight, if the Capitals want to win today, the Capitals need to score that first goal. They have to start the way they started Game 2, and they need that first goal. If they get that first goal, I think they'll win. You can't let the Penguins take the lead first. You just can't do it. And one of those pucks has to go in, and I think they will, because let's face it, the puck has to go in eventually. But the Penguins are playing absolutely flawless hockey. Flawless. You know, in the postseason, always want your best players to play at their best. And right now, all of the Penguins' best players are playing at their best. It's not just Sidney Crosby. It's every key player who helped them win last year is delivering this year again. They're doing exactly what they need to do to defend that cup. And as of today, there is no doubt in my mind, unless something goes drastically wrong, that the Penguins will defend their cup. They will defend the cup. I think this is the first time since the 90s that we're going to see back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. I really do believe it. I do. Because the Penguins look unbeatable. Every key player is getting a key goal, a key assist, a key turnover. They're in position. They're playing their hockey. They're playing better hockey than they did last year. They completely shut down Columbus, and they completely shut down the Capitals. I mean, let's face it, if the Capitals don't win this game today, it's over. There's no way they're beating this Penguins team down 3-0. No way in hell. No way. The Predators, I mean, how about Nashville? I haven't seen a Nashville game outside the postseason. I don't think ever. I think the only time I see Nashville is in the postseason. And they're a good team. Are they legitimate contenders? Last year, I didn't think so. But watching them this year against Chicago and against St. Louis, I really think they're contenders. But unfortunately, I think the Oilers are better. I think the Oilers are a more complete team than the Predators are. Maybe the Predators have them on goalie, but on offense and defense, well, mostly on offense, the Orioles have the number on it. That'd be a fun series to watch, Orioles Predators, because I do think the Blues are not as good as Nashville at this moment. Nashville outplayed them all three games. The Ducks, again, you know, just like the Capitals, they're a great team, but they can't get over that hump. They just can't do it. I don't know why, but they just can't. And the Rangers really let one go in Game 2 against Ottawa. They really let that one go. They really did. They had Ottawa reeling. You have your guy in net, your guy in defense, and you lose. So I get it. Rick Nash in overtime pretty much had a game-winning goal. Just Ottawa, that, I don't know who the Ottawa player was. The Ottawa player who blocked the net just had sheer will that kept the game going. And now tonight you're in the Garden. I think the Rangers will win today. They have to. But I do think Ottawa is going to win the series now. I think it's clear. The bricks are going Ottawa's way. It just is. It just happens that way. I'm sorry, but it just does. I'm happy about it because I hate the Rangers, but that's just what happens. And, of course, on Saturday night, I mean, this weekend was a great weekend. The Mets took 2-3 to the Nationals. The Rangers lost, and we had a good hockey. We really did. And the moment that made this weekend a truly great weekend was the NHL draft lottery. And I was watching it. I told my brother, who I was watching it with, I told him, if Las Vegas gets the number one pick, you know something's up. Now, thankfully, they didn't. I told them, if the Devils get the number one pick, I'm going to jump up so high, I'll bang my head on the ceiling. In a moment, we found out the Devils were top three. I couldn't believe it. I mean, last year, I think only one of the bottom three teams didn't get the top three picks. But this year, none of the bottom three teams got a top three pick. Colorado, I think Las Vegas, and I think the other one was Vancouver or Phoenix. I forget which one. But the Devils, Philadelphia, and Dallas got the top three picks. And the moment number one came up and it said New Jersey Devils, I was in complete shock. I couldn't believe it. Number one, I was happy that the Flyers didn't get the number one pick. And I was excited. I was ecstatic. The Devils got it. I couldn't believe it. Now, this is it now. Ray Shiro has no excuse for it to be worse than this season. The build-up begins now. You have Taylor Hall. Hopefully, Corey Schneider has a bounce-back season. Hopefully, the defense tightens up. And I really think the Devils need offense. That's the name of the game now. And the Devils have no offense. Palmieri didn't have a great season. Henrique hasn't really played at the potential in my eyes. And Camilleri is always injured, and he really didn't have a great season this year either. And it's exciting now, you know. You have two top players to pick from. I doubt Philadelphia is going to trade a second pick for anything, because they need help too. They had a horrible year as well. And honestly, if you're a Colorado Avalanche fan, sorry, I call it payback for 2001. But, you know, I mean, Colorado had such an awful year. I mean, that just probably even made it even 10 times worse than what it was. But, yes, I jumped so high. I almost hit the ceiling. Almost did. But I missed the ceiling. But I jumped up. I was smiling from ear to ear for at least 5 minutes. It didn't go away. You know, and this was honestly the one highlight of the 2016-2017 season the Devils had. Now, one highlight I will always remember this season, but only a good highlight, is the Devils getting the number one pick. I still can't believe it. I'm amazed. Now, the method about how they do this is completely idiotic. It's completely silly. I don't care. The Devils got it. Tough luck. Ha ha. Hopefully, the Devils don't bomb this year. And this is Ray Shiro's year to get this right. It is, because if they bomb again this year, there's honestly no reason for you to bring him back. No reason at all. Not all. Which brings us now to Donald Trump. It's been 100 days now since he's been president of America. Hard to believe, I know. After the first week, for any president, really, time begins to slow down. Well, it feels like it takes forever. Probably does, but who the hell knows? And, you know, you hear the media always talk about the 100 days. 100 days this, 100 days that, blah, 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 blah. And not one time, you know, does anybody tell you why they're important? What's the significance of the first 100 days? Honest with you? There's no significance. There's no big deal. It's just something for the media to talk about. Get a new president. It's exciting. Yay. All that good stuff. But really, the 100 days is the most overrated thing in the world. I didn't like it when they did it with Obama. And I don't like it when they're doing it with Trump. I just don't. I mean, can you tell me what Dwight Eisenhower did in his first 100 days? I don't know. And I love Dwight Eisenhower. Can you tell me what Teddy Roosevelt did in his first 100 days? I don't know. Can you tell me what that's an exception to the rule. Can you tell me what Woodrow Wilson did in his first 100 days? Thomas Jefferson? George Washington? I can't tell you. And I'm sure you can't tell me. I want to look it up just now. These first 100 days, you know, they've been mixed. President Trump has done some good things and done some bad things. If you love the guy, you probably had a great 100 days. If you can't stand him, then you're probably miserable and in the street protesting. And, you know, we all know President Trump's approval ratings is what one of the lowest or the lowest in this, you know, 100 day, this first 100 day time period. And listen, I'm sure the public and a good part, maybe some of his voters aren't happy with him right now. But let's be honest here. The media haven't really given this guy, some of it's his fault, some of it their fault, really a fair shake. I mean, it's clear the media hates him and he hates the media. This isn't a love-hate religion. This isn't a love-hate thing. This is a hate-hate thing. They hate each other completely. And up to the point that Donald Trump didn't even attend the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Now, I don't really like the president hanging out with the media. I don't like it at all in that setting. Because, you know, politicians, the president, shouldn't be friends with the media. Should they be cordial? Yes. Should they, you know, occasionally talk? Yes. Should they give each other goodwill? Yes. But should they be friends? No. Do I want them in a friendly setting with each other on public television? Well, yes. But this is just like, you know, something for the media and journalists to finally get, you know, that high on something. Because being a journalist isn't supposed to be. Ideally, roses and flowers and balloons and unicorns type of job. It's a tough job. It really should be an unthankful job. And this is supposed to be for the media. This is more for the media than the president. I mean, you know, I've never watched a White House Correspondents' Dinner. I didn't watch it with Bush. I didn't watch it with Obama. And I'm not going to watch it with Trump. I'm just not. says, I don't care. It's a bunch of rich people with the president to get together. I mean, whatever. People like it. I really don't. Do I think he should have gone? I don't know. If I was in his shoes, I probably wouldn't have gone. But I don't know, to be honest with you. No, I'm the president, and the press doesn't hate me. So, you know, there you go. And now we got the thing with North Korea. Tensions are rising high. And again, you know, it doesn't matter whether I'm for or against what the president is doing. The thing is this. History and the result of this conflict or tension is going to determine whether President Trump did the right thing or not. It is, you know. Just like Obamacare, history is going to dictate whether Obamacare was a success or a failure. That's just a weird goal sometimes. Because we don't know, you know, it hasn't completely gone into full effect yet. We still don't know what it's going to do or the implications it's going to have. We just don't know yet. We're finally beginning to see the end product, but we're not there yet. It's just something, just happens. Now, I was reading online today that the president wants another vote on health care. And, you know, I haven't read much into it yet, but it probably stands a better chance than the garbage bill that Paul Ryan introduced, which is complete idiocy. I mean, come on. And also, Congress compromised. Democrats and Republicans came together. Government won't shut down. It's going to be open until, what, September, October. Listen, it's just a game. Do they really care about you? I have no idea. They care about votes and power more than anything, probably. Even if President won, it was supposed to be like, oh my God, this revolution, this wave of populism, this anti-establishment. And President Trump so far seems to be just as establishment as his predecessor and his predecessor and so on and so forth. So even with a quote-unquote anti-establishment candidate, nothing, at least from this view, has changed. Is he more hostile to the media? Yes. But let's be honest here, the media is hostile towards him as well. I mean, you know, if you watch CNN, MSNBC, or even CBS News, I mean, they hate him. If you watch Fox News, they love him. I mean, you know, whatever. So that's it for today. Tomorrow, we will focus on the UK election. We'll go deeper into Donald Trump and North Korea. We'll give you the facts, not just media talking points. And we'll probably do, I don't know, maybe talk about the French election. I have to be clear. I know we cover UK election and UK politics on this show. We do that because I like UK politics. I'm interested in it. And I like to think I'm a little bit of a novice of it. But I'm not really going to focus on any other country's elections. I might do the result and maybe a little summary about it. But, you know, Le Pen or the other guy, well, I forget his name. Listen, it's going to be a closer race than people expect. Le Pen leaving that party was probably the smartest thing anybody has ever done in the world. Politically in the past 10 years. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a lot closer. I think it'll be underneath. I think if she loses, she's going to lose by looking 10 points. It's going to be a lot closer than people think. It really is. The only question is, can Le Pen muster above 50%? That's a bit complicated, but we'll see. One-on-one race. So we'll see what happens.